few times across the whole, well, since 1900, the last 100 years. It's a damn tough task. Are we going to be able to achieve it this time, do you think?
I'd like to think so. It is an enormous task. There's only ever been 8 successful referenda put out of 44. The most overwhelmingly successful yes vote, more than 90%, was the vote back in 1967 to amend the Constitution. And that was really about counting Indigenous people as part of the census, as well as giving the federal government responsibility to make laws, we thought beneficially, but to make laws for Aboriginal people across the country.
Are there any lessons to learn about past successful yes campaigns, and are there any, you know, strategies that you're following to help us get a yes on this question, on the question? And maybe we could also talk about what exactly this is all about for people that are still struggling to understand what this referendum will involve.
Well, the referendum really is about changing the constitution that was put in place by the founding fathers back in 1901, and which then saw the White Australia policy being put in place. But it was really affirming, if you like, the views and sentiments and the attitudes of the former colonies, that black people in this country weren't included as part of white identity. And the White Australia policy was not only set out to ignore and to disenfranchise Indigenous people, it sought to also give powers to the states to discriminate against people on the basis of race. And these are outdated, they're obscene, they do need to be changed, and it needs to be brought up to date. But I think most of all, that when we think about where we're at now, and Australia's been going through, I think, a difficult journey of trying to come to terms with its own sense of identity and sense of self. And really, the constitutional change, 67, was, in my view, the first plank. It was about counting us in. The 2013-2014 referenda is about writing us in. It's about acknowledging for the first time the country was and still is and will be, continue to be occupied by Indigenous people in this country. And that's much more, I think, than just window dressing. It has to be, I think, a recognition of an Australianness that currently isn't there. It goes to the question of national identity, and I certainly regard Australia as being much more than cricket, football and beaches and barbecues. And Australian Aboriginal identity, the First Nations identities and cultures, I think are integral to national identity. It's not just an add-on. You don't do it that one week of the year during NAIDOC week. It's about every day of the year, and I think it's an opportunity for other Australians to embrace that as part of how they see themselves and who they are. Because I think there's this, in some ways, Australia sort of sitting on the psychologist's couch trying to still work out who it is. And, you know, it's always fallen to, I think, Aboriginal people to provide the space and the generosity for this to occur. Reconciliation, Mabo, the land rights debate and all of that, there's been a hell of a lot of generosity shown along the way. And it's always been about coexistence, living together and sharing something in common.
Yes.
So it's probably no different this time around. And I hope this time Australia sees it for what it is. It's not just a little bit of window dressing on the edges. It's really getting to the heart of who they are, because ultimately they've got a vote.
I mean, it's really interesting when you think that who didn't actually, you know, our founding fathers were very few. Women didn't vote to, you know, for Federation. Obviously, a very few number of Aboriginal people, you know, who fluked a vote at that time got in. It's similar with women. But not only that, it was a very landed, you know, if you didn't own a house or land, you didn't get a vote either. And that was what, you know, basically voted on Federation. And, you know, it really is a horse and buggy constitution that needs to be updated in all sorts of ways. And you know, it's a remarkable thing that I think aviation in the 1949 election was going to be included by name and people voted no. It's hard to change, it's archaic. Are you getting any kind of a feeling from people that this isn't just about keeping the status quo? Because we do live in a great country, we're very privileged. And people think, oh, well, we won't change it. But people starting to get educated that we've actually got this horse and buggy, archaic thing that doesn't reflect who we are? Or is there more of a, we need to acknowledge, you know, the Indigenous people? It's just so obvious that we need to. Is that the kind of feeling you're getting?
Well, it ought to be a no-brainer. I think that when you think about what it means, we're providing a legacy for future generations. Both black and white. And certainly from the journey of recognition that started at Federation Square in Melbourne, I think there's some symbolism in that.
Yeah.
That it's really about taking a lot of the small steps to get out there, engage with people in the small community halls, barbecues and the like, and really engage them in the conversation, because this is one of those things that politicians don't get to decide. It's decided by the people. There's a challenge. You've got to get out there and make sure that even the doubters and the doomsdayers and the naysayers, and these are on both sides of the fence, it's not just non-Indigenous, about what's in it for them. And there has to be a sense of something in it, not just sort of ticking the yes box in order to deal with unfinished business. I see it as future business.
Yeah, I mean, it was very interesting to me that, you know, when Tony Abbott visited yesterday to Tagama, one of the first things that Galarrwuy said to him that was fundamental was to change the constitution to allow for the recognition of Aboriginal people, which is extraordinary, because of course Yolngu people here are, you know, are very much in charge of their own affairs and their own lands as much as, you know, as could be, and yet that still means so much to him, with the continuous culture and all that sort of stuff. He's still wants that recognition. It means a lot, and that's a fundamental thing, isn't it? It's just a right that must be wrong, a wrong that must be righted.
Well, I think that's correct, and I think that, you know, what it displays most of all is that if there were an equivalent idea of a constitutional law for Aboriginal people, then the Yolngu certainly represent that, because it doesn't amount to surrendering something in exchange for something else. It's about how you make both of those worlds coexist and come together in a way where they reinforce and affirm the existence of the other. So it's not saying to all Australians, recognise us so that we develop separately. The Yolngu are saying we're quite comfortable about that, and we're certain and sure of what our future is going to be like. But we also need that recognition in the white constitution, which is also, I think, about bringing white Australia to a different understanding of its own story and how that can be enriched through the Yolngu people, but the oldest surviving culture on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got it there, and something that precedes the Greek and Roman civilizations, and we always turn to that as the base of modern civilization, what about a civilization that goes back 40,000 years and longer?
It's a great thing. It's a great, wonderful thing that Australia has that, isn't it? And it's about time. But look, it was a very on Friday when the journey for recognition, you know, came up the Arnhem Highway and into the Garma site. It was a really special feeling that came over the whole of Garma, and you know, it felt like the whole of Arnhem Land as they arrived. But it's been about more than symbolism, hasn't it? There's been an extraordinary change of, you know, the support base for the recognition movement has really been driven hard by your leaving Federation and reaching the... Can you tell us a bit about that, Aidan, and the achievements of people that have started to sign up and what that means for where you're going next?
Well, I think that... it's much more than changing the constitution. It's changing the hearts and minds of ordinary Australians, because ultimately they're the ones that get to decide whether it becomes a reality or not. It's an enormous challenge, but I think what's exciting about it is that, you know, when you compare where we're at to the 67 referendum, and I get asked why was that so successful, I put it down to two main reasons. One is the arrival of television into people's lounge rooms. Australians, for the first time, got to see inside what was happening in Aboriginal communities in the extent of poverty. And I think also on the backdrop of the US civil rights movement, you know, the Martin Luther Kings and Malcolm X's and all of the rest, and this changing global social conscience that required a sense of justice in how you responded. So if you compare it, I think, to this particular referenda, I look at it in terms of the online environment and digital technology. People are being bombarded with so much information these days. I think I read somewhere that people get more information now in a week than they did in medieval times in 2 years.
Mm.
It's probably even more than that now. But I think the significant thing about that is that you've got to find different ways of cut through. And going out and having these conversations with people in the community halls, it's a one-on-one relationship that you're establishing. The internet, as a new television in our lounges or in our homes, continues to allow us to have re-access to those people, not just once, not just twice, but continually. And you create this network of conversation and discussion and debate, and, you know, I think we're all still coming to terms of the power of what that presents us with. So I see that as the great TV on the new modern landscape. But we've got to put into that, I think, as well, some of the narratives to do with First Nations people, our stories, and then bring that into the fore in terms of enriching the life of other Australians. I'll probably get into trouble for saying this, and I generally do, even with my own mob back at home. But I think what it really requires is, it's almost like holding up a mirror, and you say to other Australians, what's required here? You've got to go into your bathroom, look at yourself and say, I am an Aborigine. It's not about changing your racial features. It's really about having a different reverence and understanding of who you are in this country, because it's such a special place.
Mm.
And it's changing your reference point, that it's no longer about being a boat person that arrived 217 years ago.
Mm.
It's about, this is the home now.
Mm.
And I think once people do that, what it also does for Aboriginal people is it unlocks this holding or the tightness around where the generic title given to us by governments who always say, you know, we're Aboriginal, Indigenous, Torres Strait Islander. But like the Yolngu, we move back to our authentic positions of being people connected to our land, our families and our communities, and it allows memory to come to the surface on all the storytelling, which affirms identity into the future. And that's, I think, what we need to start to unlock.
So the support base for recognition has grown substantially since Melbourne, hasn't it?
Well, we started out with less than 35,000 followers. We've now gone over 150,000, just from the walk of more than 4,500 Ks through about 50 towns and villages and so on. And that really says a lot. I mean, if you think about 150,000 people, they're presumably not all in the same household. There's a multiplier effect. And this is just the first leg in a long journey. So we've still got to head across the Kimberleys, down the west coast to Perth, across the bottom part of South Australia, up through the Gulf Country to Cape York, and then back down the east coast and back to Melbourne. There's a lot of people along the way, and I expect that once we start to take a different approach, I think we'll get a different result, and I'm very hopeful. And I think we've also got a new generation of, you know, young people. At the next election, there are going to be 3 million first-time voters.
Yeah.
They're going to get to vote in this referendum. And you would hope that through the education system now and what they've heard and learnt, they're learning more about the cultures of the First Nations people. So there's an understanding that's brought to the table when they think about what's in it for them, and this is about doing the right thing for the next generation to come.
And Aidan, is there anything that stands out in the journey so far? Any particular you know, experience that you might have had over the course of the last week or couple of weeks that stands out in your mind?
Well, there's a couple of stories. I think that, you know, I hadn't realised when I sort of said, yeah, I'll walk the first sort of leg out of Federation Square, and I thought that the place we were going to was, you know, sort of three kilometres away, and it was an inner city suburb of Melbourne. Yeah. And they looked at me, and I had to look it up on Google, and it was, you know, 36 kilometres away.
Yeah.
So it was a fairly long walk, but I think if anything, it was one bloke pulled up, a non-Aboriginal guy, and he wound down his window and he saw us walking there with the R's, and he handed us, you know, a $10 note. He said, I want to make a donation, you'll probably need this. But little things like that. And then there was a young boy, I think it was near Ballarat. He's grown up in a community where, you know, unlike a lot of other places, he's never seen the Aboriginal flag flying on the top of the building, and that was the first time.
Wow.
And that brought out this, you know, overwhelming sense of pride for him and his family and the community. And then I guess to top that off, you know, coming to Yolngu country and being welcomed and embraced in, I think, in a very deep and meaningful way, that it makes it all worthwhile.
Mm.
And it gives you that sort of spirit to sort of keep going on this, because people are saying, you know what? I agree with what you're saying. We believe in this. We want to get behind that. And there are others that are prepared to sit down and say, we're ready to listen. I think the nation's at a turning point, and we can make a difference.
So, Aidan, the election happens now in the next month, September, the 7th or the, I think?
Well, the federal election's there. We get that out of the way, and once that's done, we get onto the second leg. And
so the second leg is from where?
Well, we're looking at once we... after the 7th, we'll start heading west. Yep. So it'll be across, you know, towards Darwin, and then over to the Kimberleys.
So I've got a little broadcast on Monday morning to Broome, so I'll tell them that you're coming.
Yeah, yeah, well, I think we've done pretty good pace when you consider that, you know, we left at the end of May to get up here at the beginning of August.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of Ks, but it won't be all walk. There'll be cycling.
Yep.
There'll be canoeing and kayaking across or up some of the rivers. There'll be you know, the big van with the big R sign on the time. That's R for recognition, so yep, people will see it.
Well, thank you very much, Aidan. Good luck for the next course of events. I'm sure we're going to get there.
Well, great speaking to you, and great being there to talk to the listeners.
Thanks very much, Aidan.